If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
Wine's been in my blood a long time. My parents actually started me early, and I think today, if I were to say this when I was young, they might actually be accused of child abuse of some sort. But
that's so funny, because my vineyard manager over in Sonoma once told me that if I ran into a bear, I had to throw my arms in the air, and if I ran into a cougar, then I had to roll and play dead. And then I thought, well, isn't it supposed to be the other way? And he said, oh, yes. I said, will you try to kill me?
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 492. This week we feature Chris Kajani, winemaker and general manager at Bouchain Vineyards, Carneros, Napa Valley. Carneros is an area of Napa Valley that has its very own hypnotic attraction. Winemakers that make wine in Carneros not only fall in love with the AVA, but also find its appeal incredibly peaceful. Winemaker Chris Kajani is a native of Napa and is well aware of the magic of Carneros. We met up with Chris on a recent visit to Napa Valley and talked at length about this mystical place that is Carneros. You can also hear Chris on our Vino Lingo segment, defining the phrase, drive like your mom works here. I'm in Carneros, part of Napa Valley that's a little different than the rest of the valley, also part of Sonoma, and I am here with Chris Kajani. She is the winemaker as well as the general manager at Bouchain Vineyards. How are you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks for taking the time today. A blistering hot day. Wow, crazy.
Yeah. Luckily down here, it's not quite as blistering.
No, it's not. Yesterday was really a nasty one. This time of year, we're still in May, right? Yes.
We're still in May.
So not too often it happens like this, does it, really?
You get heat spikes at different times of the year and different seasons. It's been a bit of a merry-go-round the last 10 years or so.
I'm thinking more specific to Carneros, just because it is generally a cooler area. So,
well, it still is cooler. I mean, if we're high 80s here, it's going to be definitely 100 at the top of the valley. So,
well, I'm glad I'm here.
You're in the right spot.
Yeah. I think one thing that's very cool about you in particular is you are a native Napa person, or a Napkin, as they call it. I don't know if that's a term you like using or not.
But I am. Born at Queen of the Valley Hospital.
That's very cool. Interesting. You don't meet a lot of winemakers that were born here, and there is maybe kind of a pedigree that comes with that. Did you grow up in a wine family? That's such a common question, but you got to ask it.
Sure. No, I do not have a pedigree. My dad went to the University of Kansas, go Jayhawks, and he was a nuclear engineer, and his very first job was on the submarines when Mare Island was a naval base.
Your dad's a serious guy.
And my dad, who has since passed away, was a very serious guy, but also a huge wine lover. And he got into Napa Valley and decided that maybe wine would be a good swap for bourbon and branch water. So I remember being 16, and he's like, we got to get your license. We need your license right now. And I thought I'd be the cool kid with the car in high school, but it was really so I could be the designated driver and take him and family members and everybody else up and down the valley. And you may or may not remember that Chimney Rock, that whole area, we used to be a golf course.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
actually.
Wow. A lot of rattlesnakes, but it was a great golf course back in the day. So I think that was my introduction to wine, was basically being the DD driving up and down the valley with my dad and family members. And then, of course, popping into all the amazing wineries back then and just starting to get a sense of what the valley was all about.
He had a definite purpose in mind for you.
I think he did.
Yeah. Well, that's not a bad thing. But so did that love of wine rub off on you?
Absolutely, and I think it sat in the back of my mind. I ended up getting a science degree at Davis and was working biotech, working for Genentech, actually, in San Francisco. And at a random dinner party, I ran into a Pinot Noir winemaker, Ed Kurtzman. And at the time, he was at Testarossa. And he really talked me into this. He's the one who said, you have a science degree, you've traveled, you've taken wine classes, you could totally do this. And I was at a little, you know, kind of area in my career where I either had to potentially get a PhD or do something to move forward. And so everything that Ed was telling me kind of sat in the back of my mind, and I ended up doing some work with him at Testarossa and really got the bug. I don't mind looking like someone threw a trash can on me, you know, every day at work. I love hands-on. And I think the one thing I was missing in my previous career was watching the entire life cycle of something. So in winemaking, or at least in my current role, you are watching bud break, you are watching the growing season, you're going through, you know, for shoot positioning, leafing, you roll into bloom, you roll into to set veraison, you harvest fruit, you make wine, you bottle wine, and then you continue to watch it. And I haven't had that in any career I've ever been in. So when you say, was I bitten by the bug? Like, the second that I saw that I could really follow something that I was a part of through its entire life cycle, that resonated really deeply with me.
And you talk about life cycle, it's part of the earth growing so many things. Yeah, that's all really connected, as it is connected to us as humans, right?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Also interesting that you had a science background. Not super unusual for winemakers. If there is a DNA, a kind of a line that connection to many of you, it is science, medical, that sort of thing. Would you say that's like a curiosity, or is it just something that's just part of what you are?
You know, I can speak to the folks that I ended up back at Davis with the second time for the master's in viticulture and enology, and a lot of them did come from medical backgrounds or thought they were going to go to medical school or had science degrees. But strangely enough, a lot of people, business majors, liberal arts, just people that loved wine and wanted to know more, and then like started a deep dive, and next thing you know, they're back in school. So I think it can be a little bit of both. And there's not one way to do this. You know, there's a million ways to make wine and a million types of people that actually, you know, put that process together for their particular situation. That being said, seemingly about 50% of the folks that I run into have that science background.
Is that like a geek factor? I don't
know.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe, right? Because it's microbiology. You have the yeast. You know, it's all of the soil science and, you know, the viticulture itself, you know, the actual grape growing. And then you get into the lab, and then you have all your processes. There's the whole engineering aspect, especially as you start to design wineries and think about flow. So it brings together a lot of pieces.
Yeah, sure does. Have you worked outside the Valley at all? And when I say the Valley, meaning both maybe Napa and Sonoma?
Not in a permanent position. No, I've worked in different wineries, but when I was at Davis for the degree, I started at Pallmeyer as an intern. That was 2004. And then I was really lucky to get hired on. So I was kind of working with them finishing the degree. But I happened to work with them the year that they brought in the Wayfarer project, which is their project out on the coast. Originally, it was called Pallmeyer Pinot, but that label sort of morphed into Wayfarer. And the second that I tasted, you know, young Pinot Noir versus making young Cabernet, I definitely was bit by the Pinot Noir bug.
Yeah, I believe that. And that's, of course, what you're doing here in Carneros.
Yeah.
Well known for Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, but specifically Pinot Noir. You know, the grape everybody talks about being the most difficult to grow. Because of Carneros, again, the climate here, and when you run into days like today, are you super diligent at being in the vineyard and just, I guess, are you overprotective in any way, shape, or form?
I do believe that the amount of detail that you put into your vineyard, you gain 10 times that when you actually bring fruit in. And so I'm a huge believer of spending a lot of time in the vineyard and a lot of time on not just what you're doing, but the timing of when you do it, how you do it. We've been super fortunate to work with this amazing female vic crew. I love them. We work with Walsh Vineyard Management, and they bring the ladies out here for the things that just really, really require a ton of detail. Tunnel leafing, I don't think it's anything that anybody would wake up in the morning and be like, I think I want to be on my knees all day and like reach up inside a canopy and try and tunnel leaf this. But depending on how your trellis system is, depending on I'm pointing this way because that's the vineyard right there.
Sure.
Depending
everybody
on how
the vineyard's over there.
Right,
there
it's right there. Yeah. Depending on how you're set up, you know, there are very certain things that require a certain level of detail. So yeah, I do spend a lot of time kind of directing how that all looks, and have this insane detailed crew that makes it all happen. Because there's 87 acres out there.
It's a lot.
So it's a lot to go through.
could be a bit daunting, yes.
Yeah.
Interesting you talk about all-female crew. Mm-hmm. And there's more female winemakers than there's ever been before, is as I see it, simply because you're stepping forward and it's becoming maybe less and less of a male-dominated business. Fair to say?
I don't know. I don't know if we have a good... I don't know if we have our arms around those statistics, really.
Well, let me rephrase it by saying it's the ball rolling in the right direction versus, say, 10 years ago. And I'll give you one simple example for me. Go to Premier a few years ago. I was just going through the catalog, and just out of curiosity, I started counting women.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, there's a lot. And there does seem to be, in my mind, a shift, because that's a fairly reasonable representation of winemakers.
Sure.
So it's not just a guy's business.
Yeah. Moving in the right direction, like you said.
Exactly. I don't want to make a big deal out of that. I just kind of want to go down that path for a moment. How long have you been winemaker here at Bouchain?
I started here in 2015 as winemaker GM, but I've been in Carneros. I've been working with Carneros Fruit since 2004. I love it out here. We tell everybody that traffic in Carneros means you got caught behind a tractor. It's so bucolic. It's so kind of removed from a lot of the hubbub. I think the community down here is amazing. Tons of old school growers, you know, Larry Hyde, Lee Hudson, and so many people who have been here since before the AVA was the AVA. You know, Bouchain was founded in 1981, 2 years before Carneros was an AVA, as was Saintsbury, the place I worked before I came here. And I think people who come down here are incredibly committed to this site. It's a really special spot right off the bay.
And it's a family winery because it's owned by Tatiana and Garrett Copeland.
Correct.
And the whole idea that for people to understand is there are still family wineries, and in fact they dominate in both here and Sonoma, right?
Yeah, I don't know if they dominate. There seems to be.
Well, there's a shift going
there seems
on.
To be a few buyouts. There yeah. seems to be, you know, some movement, especially during times as tough as COVID. But in the grand scheme of things, the family wineries are still here, and we so appreciate folks that support that.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And when I say dominate, I kind of look at, again, stats from the NBV where they talk about majority of the winemakers in the NBV are family wineries. So for your time in this business, as a winemaker specifically, what's the craziest advice you've ever been given, or strangest advice?
Let's see. I one time had someone tell me to go with the flow, which is not my personality, nor do I think it does the wine a service a lot of the time. So I just chose to ignore that. I don't think that you need to force a round peg into a square hole, but I do think you need to pay attention. Like, wine is this living thing. And when you have, whatever, 1,000 barrels of it, you know, all of that moves and shifts and
sure.
ages and is alive. And so I'm not so much a go with the flow as I am keep an eye on it.
Sure. Are you all estate or...?
Almost. We do probably right around 90% estate. We buy some fruit from Larry Hyde, and so we're doing Merlot, Syrah, and Chardonnay from Larry Hyde, and I tell everybody he's my virtual boyfriend. I love Larry. I love Larry so much. He is the epitome of a gentleman farmer.
Yeah, I can see
shares
that.
All the information, looks at your soil pit data, and talks to you about rootstocks and what he's tried and what he hasn't tried. And I really appreciate his insight. And his son Chris Hyde is also phenomenal.
Chris
has
is
been
awesome.
A great, great, great partner. And then since 1984, we've been getting the G Vineyard, and Paul G is right across Buckley Station Road from us, so he's basically a neighbor. And that vineyard is completely dry farm. There's no irrigation line on it at all. And it's head trained, so it's Pinot Noir, but it kind of looks like a head trained Zinfandel or Syrah vine. Hand planted in '82 by his family and his closest friends. You know, the kids would fill up 5-gallon paint buckets with water and water every vine so often till they established. Like, it was a labor of love, and it makes this incredible wine. So those are the two growers that we're working with now. And then we buy a little bit of Pinot Blanc from Francis Mahoney, who's also been out here in Carneros forever and ever.
One thing about Carneros, which is it's very different than going up 29, Highway 29, and certainly different than Sonoma in many ways. What makes it special for you other than the wine?
You know, I love that proximity to the bay. I love the breezes. I love the fog in the morning. it has this character where you kind of hold time sort of based on what the fog is doing. You know, I look out my window sometimes, I'm like, oh, look, the fog is clear. It must be 11. It's time to think about lunch, you know.
It's a good way to fill time, actually.
Right?
Yeah.
Or in August when the fog comes in, like really heavy, similar to San Francisco in August, it's freezing. You're like, all right, you know, out in the vineyard, you know, getting closer and closer to harvest. So I strangely, you know, kind of have the year in my head based on what the fog patterns are these days. And I think that's what makes the site so special, you know, all of that marine influence, yeah. All of that bay influence. And from our terraces, actually, you look right across the bay, 35 miles south to the financial district, you can see Sutro Tower, on Twin Peaks on a clear day, which is not every day, but when it's clear.
When it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. And I don't necessarily want to give this strictly towards Bouchain, but when you're drinking a Pinot, what is it you look for as a person who tastes wine?
Layers and complexity. I don't care so much about color. There's so many beautiful Pinots that are really, really light. But have this, you know, these layers to them and this intrigue. And, you know, the wines that I, like, write the most notes about, you know, if I'm actually taking a note, you know, every descriptor may not be, you know, something, like, incredibly positive, but they all knit together to give you this picture of something that has a personality and has so many different layers and characteristics. You know, that and a certain mouthfeel, a certain mm-hmm. sure. energy, a certain tension is what I love to drink.
Good. Just wanted to get an idea as a yeah. winemaker, because I think a lot of people want to go, well, what turns you on when
sure.
you're drinking the wine? And I think they want to kind of slip into that a little bit, but in the end, people really got to figure it out for themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, know what you like, right? There's plenty of wine out there. I'm just excited when I see people drinking wine. I don't care what it is. What really gets me upset is if I show up at a barbecue and I see a ton of White Claw. I'm like, oh my God, that's not even a real beverage. Like, what is that?
Kind of drifted back in the old spritzer period, haven't we? Yeah, but, you know, that stuff like that comes and goes. And I'm going to go down that path for a sec. What's kind of good about that is it is a fad, and certainly in wines we have fads, but this stuff does tend to go away, and wine is the rock solid guy. It's there, and I think that has better legs, no pun intended, would you say?
Right? Well, and people are doing wine in cans now, and so much
sure,
of it is
yeah.
really delicious and easily portable, and you're not carrying a glass bottle around if you're trying to hike up a hill or something like that. So all of that's fantastic. I encourage people to drink what they like. It doesn't matter what I think about the wine. It doesn't matter if someone else, you know, is into it, not into it. Drink what you like. And then most of the time when people are curious about wine, have enjoyed something, they just keep trying other things.
Right.
I mean, I think that's how we all got into it. I started with Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. And if it was like a fancy date night, you know, it was like Sutter Home White Zin. Like, you start somewhere
right. And
you enjoy it and you keep trying more things.
I think it's great that you admitted to Boone's
yeah,
Farm, because
totally.
Few people would do that.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it's a fact.
I drank a lot of wine coolers.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's not a bad thing. This could go positive or negative,
mm-hmm.
and you could go both ways that you like, but what makes you crazy about the wine business?
What makes me crazy? You know, in the grand scheme of things, it's a fantastic community. People support each other. You know, there's so many tasting groups. There's so many opportunities to connect with other people that are doing what you're doing, but doing it in different ways. You know, see new equipment, see new, new procedures that other people are using. And then occasionally you have people that are total jerks. It's like any other business. I guess that drives me crazy, because when you're trying to invite people to come into your community and to participate, because so much of what we do is tourist driven and is DTC driven, you know, when you get the jerks that are standing out, you're like, oh, come on. You make it hard for people to come. You make it hard for people to not know,
yeah.
you know? And there's so much that none of us know about wine.
Right.
You can be in this industry, you know, for decades, and no one knows everything. And so I get frustrated when people put down folks that may not have as much wine knowledge. That's frustrating, and I think it's shooting yourself in the foot. But outside of that, it's a really fun community. It's a ton of amazing people that are just trying to put something delicious in a bottle, and most people are just lovely.
They are. I agree. Well, and you're in the wine business. How can you not be happy when you're making wine?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you participate in typical tasting groups or tasting group, a tasting group?
Yeah, multiple, actually. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, I'm part of a female GM forum, which is fantastic. So it's basically women who are running wineries that get together and bounce ideas and have the ability to chat about what's happening in their world in a way that's very open and very honest.
Sure. I think just from my point of view, I own a business. I think about the idea of being a winemaker, what that entails, the travel, the time in the cellar during harvest, that sort of thing. And then being a GM on top of it, especially with a property like that, man, you got a lot on your shoulders, don't you?
You got to have a good team.
Yeah, that's good.
You got to have a good team. And it's been a little bit of a struggle with COVID because the labor market's been really tight. And so we haven't had too many people leave. But, you know, when a key position does leave and you're trying to find somebody, you know, half the time there's, 6 months of trying to find the right person and trying to find the right fit and doing some due diligence to really, you know, bring in that new employee that's going to mesh with the team and who is going to mesh with your culture outside of just being able to do the job. And so that's where it gets dicey because it's like, who's going to do this for 6 months while we find someone?
Yeah, chemistry just can't be programmed. It has to be chemistry.
Right, or accounting, or you know, sales positions. You know, everyone. I feel like in these small family wineries, you know, everyone's role is so critical, and you see it. You see what each person contributes. And we only have like 21 employees, and so if you miss somebody or someone's sick, or you know, occasionally someone does leave, you see that hole. It's really apparent.
Yeah.
Because what you do here matters. Like every single position, you know, is so impactful. Because it's such a tight team.
Yeah. How many cases are you making here at Bouchain?
Depending on Mother Nature, it floats between like 15 and 18,000.
Oh, so small, but a pretty respectable size.
Yeah. There.
Yeah, that's nice. That's one thing, again, our listeners really like to seek out. So I've come to the question that I'd like to ask more than any. This is the one we talked about before the interview.
I'm going to take a big glass, big sip of wine.
Yeah. Of all the times you've done media, you do interviews, you talk to people, what's the one question that you don't get asked that you would like to be asked?
Oh, great question. I mean, so many questions are wine-centric. I think some of the interesting things that winemakers do are what they do outside of winemaking that allows them to rejuvenate year after year. You know, seemingly you do the exact same thing, slightly differently based on Mother Nature and based on the vintage, but it's the same thing year after year after year after year. Again, different challenges, different vintages, early, late, you know, this, that. But it's funny, you know, talking to my friends that make wine about what people do outside that keeps them fresh and keeps them going and keeps them pushing forward. You know, and some folks, whatever, run marathons. You know, some people take you know, the hours and hours they spend on viticulture on a daily basis into their backyard and have these like insane gardens. I have a friend that just has this massive garden. He comes home and waters seemingly every day for 3 hours. I'm like, how do you leave a vineyard and then go do that? But that's a real passion, sure, right? Like, yeah. Growing things.
Yeah.
So I think that's an interesting question.
It's a good question. It's a good answer.
Yeah.
Very good. You got through. You passed the gauntlet.
I did it.
Yeah, very good. Chris, this is a beautiful property. God, I know. I say that a lot. It's extraordinary. Sitting here in the office, as we both look out the window, you got the vineyards there, which is kind of inspirational, even though you get to see them every day. A wonderful place and some really beautiful buildings, too. Very interesting construction. Most importantly for our visitors who want to come here, obviously it's by appointment, I'm assuming.
We have an older permit, so you're allowed walk-ins into our garden area. So people are totally welcome to walk in, and we have space. At this point, with a newer hospitality center, as you mentioned, the building, we kind of have two tasting possibilities. You can come down into the garden, you can bring your dogs, your kids, and just relax and enjoy. Or there are hosted tastings up in the new hospitality center, and that's where a lot of the smaller production wines, we probably make, I think we're over 20 wines now, 21, 22 wines, and most of them, you know, are whatever, 200-400 cases. Yeah. And so we rotate those through the hospitality center and have like a little bit deeper conversation.
Sure, that's nice. And most importantly for our listeners who want to learn about you online, what is your website?
Bouchain.com. It's all there.
That's very nice.
And I do want to mention, if anyone's interested in visiting, there's also a ton of experiences. We do things like pair wine and cheese. We do things like have our falconer come do demos.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
So we use a falconer for bird mitigation because we are surrounded by telephone wires. And we've all seen the birds on the telephone wires, and the ones here come down and snack on the grapes all day. So the falconer shoos those off. But in addition to that, we're partnering with Cisco, and the whole vineyard is lit up with sensors right now. So there's a whole taste of technology tour to talk about what these sensors are and how they help us with our sustainability goals and our green farming and really watching our water use. We love to dry farm as much as possible. Years like 2021, it's hard. Very minimal rain in 2021. But another year, 17, 18, we didn't water anything. And so with these sensors and with additional soil moisture probes, we're able to dial that in. And water is such a resource in California, such a precious resource. So allowing us to pull back on any irrigation uses. Phenomenal.
Drought is a frightening thought, especially for farmers more than just about anybody
gosh.
Else.
Yeah.
So I hope that works out somewhere along the line, which sounds like a crazy thing to say. But most importantly, Chris, thanks very much for taking the time today.
Oh, thank you.
I appreciate it.
No, it's wonderful to talk to you. Thanks.
Learn more at Bouchain.com. Thanks for listening to the longest-running wine podcast online. Subscribe to the podcast at lifebetweenthevines.com or sign up to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Pascoff. Our web geek is Dan Geeshan. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2022.